Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing with me, Peter Higgins at Compass3 on Twitter and Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. Now, this is Twin Peaks Investing podcast number 19, part two that we're recording, and it's now 4 minutes past seven on the 19th of March. And the markets are obviously in the UK are already shut. We've spent the first podcast, I hope you've listened to it and enjoyed it, talking about the budget, the coronavirus, and a few other aspects and a few different stocks. And we're going to continue in that vein regarding everything else now. Pete, are you there, mate?
Yeah, I'm there, mate. One thing that I really want to say, and I think it's really important to get this message over, because I've had so many people DM me, phone me up, text me, blah, 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 that, you know, they're really scared. You know, people are really scared. And I just want to sort of smooth a few people and sort of say, well, you know, it will recover as long, you know, if you're holding AIM junk, then, you know, your life's always going to be tough. But if you're holding half decent stocks and you've got a diversified portfolio and you're in for the long term and you've got dividend paying stocks and all that kind of good stuff, yeah, we're going for a terrible time. But it will recover. It will be all right. So don't anyone think this is the end of the world. And if you do think it's the end of the world and you're really at your wit's end, DM me. I've got open DMs on Twitter at Wheelie Dealer. Just DM me. I won't get back to you instantly, but I will get back to you. And you know, let's, you know, we'll try and talk it through and make sure things are okay. You know.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant that you're saying that, Pete. And you've done that so much. Historically anyway, and it's something that we both do. I've been dealing with quite a lot of DMs for, it seems like, ages now, and more so over the past couple of weeks. And this is from, everyone will think, oh, I'm getting DMs and asking me for help and support, and they're newbies. This is coming from everybody, you know. There's somebody, yeah, I know who's been in the markets 27 years and they've got or had 1.85 million was the top of their portfolio back in February. And the conversation I was having with him last week, because I've not spoken to him since then, he's tried to just take himself out of the markets for a little while, was he was down 400K in a matter of months. Now, this isn't the person that buys junk stocks. This is a guy who follows stocks that are Slater related type methodology type stocks, you know,
quality. So it's like Mark Slater and
Mark
sort
Slater
of,
quality, yeah,
yeah.
Profitable stocks.
Jim Slater, isn't it? Jim Slater, yeah. Zulu, yeah.
Profit Zulu sort of principle stocks,
man. Yeah.
And it's down a hell of a lot. And newbies are down 20-30-40%. So are institutional fund managers. You know, Nick Train, you know, got stocks that are down 30-40%. So everyone's in the same boat right now.
They're all getting battered. Do you know what? I heard something really interesting. Again, one of the brilliant things about DMs, and I find this incredible, and I'm flattered that this happens, so thank you people who do it. I get people who contact me who really are serious big hitters in the city. You get it all the time, Pete, the same. Really serious big, and it's absolutely flattering that they consider me worth talking to, do you know what I mean? And one of the things that one of them said, he's basically like a sort of broker for a fund management group, yeah? So I don't quite understand how it works, but my sort of understanding is that basically the fund managers say, I want to buy this stock. So his job is then to go off and try and buy the stock, yeah? And he was saying in the last few days, he said, even on large cap stocks, we're talking FTSE 100, yeah? It was so hard to try and buy something or to sell it or whatever. And he said, what would happen is you'd go to get a quote and you'd get a quote come back on the system. And before you could click the button, the quote had changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Mental.
Or Pete, the other issue is you've got the normal market size that you can actually purchase and sell.
Yeah.
And because of issues with the platforms, either you can't even get online, or when you go to sell 2,000 shares or 5,000 shares or 10,000, whatever the normal market size is, it's not allowing you to do that. It's saying, oh, you've got to phone it through. And then you're waiting, and whatever price you want you to get is long gone, or you can't even get access to the platform anyway.
The one that, it's funny actually, because you know, I sort of said on part one that, in so many ways, this is worse than 2008-09, the credit crunch. It is worse.
It is worse, and
the speed of the falls and that, it's just awful. But one of the things that has been interesting for me is that on the whole, I have actually stayed much calmer, much more rational, much more in control, and much less worried. And I'm really pleased that that has happened. And I think a lot of it is just simply experience. And I think, having realized ahead of the game that something was up and getting my shorts on and hedging my portfolio has really helped me. But I had this terrible, I got to tell you about it because it was just so awful. I had this horrible Monday morning. It must have been like, I don't even know when it was. It was probably like 2 weeks ago or something, or a week ago. It was that one where overnight the oil price tanked.
Yes.
So I wake up at 8 o'clock as normal, just thinking, life's great. Just wake up, pick up my phone. I've got like loads of messages from people. I think, what's going on? And basically mates had texted me and stuff saying, oil's tanked, FTSE futures have tanked, blah, blah, blah. And it's like the world was just going mental. It was like down, I think it was down like 8% or something, the FTSE 100. And I was like, oh, my God. Mm. And I'm thinking of my leverage spread bet positions and thinking, well, I'm just not hedged enough. I'm really in the car here. And anyway, I'm sort of like lying there thinking, don't panic, stay cool, right? And I just couldn't stay cool. My brain is just running, And I grabbed my phone. Well, I grabbed my tablet, right? And I tried to log on to IG Index on the app. And it says, app not available. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I tried to log on to IG Index on my phone. And bear in mind, I'm lying in bed. I go on my phone and it says, app not available. I'm like, oh, sugar. And I'm lying there thinking, well, what am I going to do? It's almost like you need to know what the situation is before you can act, yeah? And I'm absolutely, my heart is going, my blood pressure's up, my brain is racing. And it's so bad, I actually get out of bed. Can you imagine I get out of bed at 8 in the morning? This is just ridiculous. And so I get up, I log onto my computer, and I thought to myself, I've got to try and calm down, because I could tell that I was in a state, yeah? An emotional state. And I go and get a cup of tea or something just to make myself calm down. And I sort of took like 10 minutes just to try and calm down. I then log on to the computer, log on to the IG Index thing. Of course, I've never used that for years. So I always do my trades on the app. And I don't know what to do. And I'm looking at the screen thinking, oh my God, what is going on? And I sort of realize that I'm okay on my positions and my cash available and whatever. But I make this sort of snap decision, which is really unlike me. I make a snap decision to short the FTSE 100 and hedge my long portfolio, yeah? So unusual, in this, because I normally make decisions out of market hours in a really rational way, and it was like a real rush decision. Of course, as soon as I short it, it goes up, doesn't it? You just guarantee that.
You can guarantee that. I mean, the thing is, we've spoken about this before, and we've done a lot of proprietary work in trying to help investors prepare for any sort of eventuality. And I've spoken before about the psychology of investing. And one of the many facets of that is remaining calm. And one of the things that you've always done.
I lost it this morning.
Is you said, I'm not going to do any, I'm not going to make any snap decisions. I'm not going to do much in the markets. But this market has been so different that everybody psychologically has been tested. Their resilience has been tested. Now, aspects of psychology, recency. Right, it's an obsession with recent and salient issues, right? And we get overwhelmed by it and our own thinking. Now,
you mean something that's happened fairly recently a lot of weighting on our current thinking.
So okay. we've had in recent months, and let's say 12 months, we've had all the trade war stuff going on. We've had Brexit. We've had a general election, We've had the coronavirus. Everything that could be thrown at this market has been thrown at this market.
Now we've had all that terrible political stuff over Brexit.
And all of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the experience and even the newbie investor, right, has been absolutely smashed from pillar to post in the past year and a half.
Yeah.
All of that is a recency psychological issue. we are now being tested. Now,
so you mean like the recency bias is building up in our brains and building up in our brain.
It's a stressor.
Yeah, I like that.
So we've got a fear building up inside of us as to potentially this is going to happen. I'm going to lose all of this profit that I had in my portfolio.
Everyone
in 2019 was rejoicing that they were up 10, 15, 30, 40. Some people were up a ridiculous amount of percentage.
50%,
And we had the Boris rally going into the end of the year and into the beginning of this year, and people were up 5%, 10%, 15% in, well, up to and including the middle of Feb.
Yeah.
Right? And then
the start of 2020 was brilliant.
All of a sudden, that euphoria is then met by the complete opposite, hysteria, right?
Yeah.
And what you have to remember, and this is what I keep saying about mastering our own psychology, is that the vast majority of the people that we speak to are investors of different types.
Yeah.
Short, momentum, value, growth, whatever. But investors, in theory, are people that try to make investments on the basis that they can leave things untouched or even unseen for the next 10 years. Now, we put out, I think it was put out a poll a while ago talking about how long people invest into stocks for. And I use the question investing as well. But the vast majority of people haven't held a stock for 3 years. So they're classing themselves as investors, but they haven't held anything for 3 years. Now, if you've held it for 3 years and it's doing all right, you're holding it for 3 years and you've made a certain profit, you're keeping it. If it hasn't and something better comes along, you're selling it. And you're moving on to the next one, the churn and churn. You look at some people's portfolio and you look back 12 months, it's completely different to what they held 12 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with one of the big problems with that is that it's all the constant trading runs up so many fees, not just the dealing fees and the stamp duty, but it's also the timing costs of selling, not at the perfect time, buying not at the perfect time. And you're just exacerbating these costs and mounting up these costs over time.
Absolutely.
Making life hard for yourself, basically.
Absolutely. But this is what I'm saying. And I think, and I said this before when I was on the Investors Chronicle podcast, Pete, we're all invariably traders because we look for opportunities to add to top slice, to reinvest our dividend and all the rest of it. So I think we're all traders. But if you're buying a stock and something happens, sometimes we as normal individuals and in our psyche, it's fight or flight. Rather buying it and buying it again and buying it again and averaging down, or we're like, I'm out of here.
Greed or fear, isn't it? Greed or fear.
Greed or fear. And we're out, we're stopping, we're out, we're back. You know what I mean? And we've all done that, I think, in this particular time because we've been tested. There were people that were saying certain things on Twitter and saying this is nonsense and this is not going to happen and I'm buying this and I'm buying that. And a few days later, they sold the same stock they bought 3 days earlier. You know what I mean? So everybody's being tested.
That's not long-term investing,
It's not long-term investing.
That's just churning your portfolio for the sake of making you broken.
No one knows where the bottom is. So one of the strategies I want to share with you, ladies and gents, is the strategy that I use for buying and selling stocks. Okay? And I've said this before. I normally buy in three different tranches because I don't know where the bottom is. I use technical analysis. I use charting. I use all my fundamental research, look at sum of parts, all the rest. I do all of that. But I can never tell you where the bottom price is. There's some people out there that catch the bottom every single time and sell the top every single time. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. Okay? We don't go into that. So ordinarily, on a pretty pedestrian sort of FTSE 100 movement of daily, 0.5%, 1%, blah, blah, blah. I will buy 2.5% of a stock and then that's me locked in. I'm fully invested in that stock. Ordinarily, I don't go above that. Although everyone knows that I've got a stupid amount of percentage in AstraZeneca, okay?
Yeah.
Ordinarily,
that's three
different tranches over a certain period of time or a certain price frame. I'll buy that. Now, in this volatile market now where things are going up 5%, 10%, £1,000, 1,000 points on the Dow, 2,000 points on the Dow, up and down, blah, blah, blah. No one knows what is going on. No one's got a Scooby-Doo, right? One of the things to consider if you're thinking about it, you're thinking, oh, crikey, this stock's a bargain now. It's 50% down to where it was in February. I want to hold this for the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, come what may.
Yeah.
Is even if you think the bottom is in, consider purchasing instead of three tranches of the stock over a period of time, 5, maybe 6, and break that down to whatever percentage you want to
scale in more.
Portfolio. So if you want to hold 3%, do 5, 6 tranches of that to make up your 6%. Or five tranches.
And obviously that applies to people with chunky portfolios.
If
if you're a younger guy or whatever with a smaller portfolio, and obviously it's difficult to do that, but you should certainly sort of try and do one or two or three nibbles at a stock rather than just buying it all at once.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter, Pete, whether you're putting in your 20k for your ISA next month, right? If you're buying a stock for $5,000, you can do 5 tranches of £1,000 into that stock. If you've got cash on your balance on your portfolio and it's worth 200-300k and you've got 10% of that, you can then apply that to the market. If you've kept stock since the beginning of March and they're down 30-40% and you're absolutely done your research, and there's going to be other profit warnings coming forward, folks, in certain stocks. Yeah, if you want to add to one of the stocks or two of the stocks or all the stocks that are down 30-40% since this thing kicked off, you've got a whole year to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I you say about profit warnings. I've noticed that profit warnings seem to come in a couple of camps at the moment. There seems to be profit warnings where the shares just fall even more. I've got to say this, right? The one yesterday that blew my brain. And it's part of the reason I was talking about a capitulation, was that yesterday I was looking down my portfolio, and this was, I don't know, mid-morning or something. No, probably about, say 12 o'clock midday, Looking down my portfolio and thinking, this is getting battered, that's up a little bit, that's battered, whatever. I go down my list. McCarthy and Stone, MCS, is down 52%. And I literally hold the screen in my hand and I go, and it was involuntary. It wasn't contrived. This isn't me just making up nonsense. It actually happened in real time. I actually did. I almost shout at the top of my voice, "Fuck me," and I just couldn't believe it. It was astonishing. And to me, when I'm doing that, that is a sign we're getting near some sort of bottom. It may not be the bottom, but it's certainly a short-term bottom, I suspect. And I think it could be an MC in McCarthy and Stone, because it was ridiculous. I mean, what are they doing? 52% down after it's already been falling for flipping weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the stock was nearer to what, 160 in February. It's 40 pence today, right? So they're constructing homes for our elderly and retired to live in. Now, they've already got quite a large estate of houses that people have bought. Now, if people are thinking, there's going to be a large scale number of people no longer buying those properties, they're going to be staying at home in care homes and whatever, and not buying that property, or there's going to be infection rates within that. I don't know what the reasons why. There was a COVID update, wasn't there, on the 18th, and it's been falling off a cliff ever since.
Well, they gave a new, what triggered it was a news update yesterday. And what they did was they cut the dividend, basically to conserve cash, which is obviously what all businesses, businesses are trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think it was the dividend that really spooked people. Yeah. But even so, 52%, it was just ridiculous. And you just think, oh, my Lord. And, if the world is ending, which it isn't, if the world is ending, then it's reasonable that MCS should be sold off. If the world's going to continue and in 2-3 years' time people are going to be living, then MCS is going to recover. It's just ridiculous.
It's not the only one, though, Pete. There is the buildings materials company, Kingspan, today decided to withdraw proposal for a forthcoming dividend of 33.5 cents. Yeah? You had
the epic on that one, mate?
Oh, you always ask this.
KGS. We can look it up later. I think it might be KGS, Kingspan.
Right? Micro Focus have come out and said they're thinking of considering pulling a dividend of 58.33 cents as well.
Yeah.
That was a stock, Pete, that was, doing ever so well until it decided to go and buy a part of Hewlett Packard. And it's never recovered since.
I called that one because this is one where I'm going to claim a victory. I didn't hold it, but I did say at the time they bought it, I said, you know, I knew HP because of my old job with Fujitsu, and I knew what it was like. And I said, that ain't a good buy. And that certainly proved right.
It's so going back to your Kingspan, it's KGP.
Sorry, mate. Brilliant. KGP.
So micro focus.
Yeah, what's that? MCRO, is it?
MCRO, yeah. Is currently sitting at £3.65.
Yeah.
A year, so going back to July of last year, it was 21, nearly 22 quid.
Whew.
Yeah. I can't remember the actual time frame when they bought Hewlett Packard, but it's got to be around
a couple of years.
About 2017-ish. It was 27 quid. Yeah, so it's got a market cap now of 1 billion. What did they buy the Hewlett Packard thing for? Was it about 4 billion or something daft like that?
God knows.
And it's now, it's now worth a billion quid.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
But the dividend
it just shows, it's a good lesson here about how acquisitions that go wrong can be really value destructive. And it's that thing where if you're looking at acquisitions, it's better if the acquisitions are small bolt-on acquisitions to what you got. These big transformative acquisitions so often go wrong, don't they?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely.
Something I wanted to cover quickly. Well, you know, you were on psychology just now with your recency bias. Mate, it's so recent, I forgot what we were talking about. I was just going to say, right, you know, I was saying earlier that I've had loads of DMs, loads of texts, loads of phone calls, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I was going to say, I have found the last 3-4 days this week absolutely mentally draining. It's exhausting. You know, it's like if I'm not, I guess one of the things with replying to DMs and texts and whatever is your brain's jumping around. One minute you're talking about one stock, then you're talking about another stock, then you're talking about a market, then you're talking about this, then you're talking about that. And it's this constant flipping of your brain. And then when you're not doing that and you're on the phone talking to somebody and you're talking to someone else on the phone, then you're looking at like the news and stuff and trying to turn your brain on to figure out what's going on with the news. It's exhausting. It is. Today I've really tried to pull myself back from everything and have an easy day. And it's almost like I need to give my brain a little bit of a rest.
Okay, Pete, I'm going to give you some tips here now, mate.
Yeah, okay? That's good. It's good stuff.
I practice mindfulness. Everyone knows that. NLP practitioner. And I try and stay calm.
What's NLP? What's that, mate?
Neuro-linguistic programming, Pete.
Is that a stock, NLP? No, I'm joking.
I'm sure there's a stock out there with that ticker symbol. But essentially, it's about using all the different strengths that you've got and all the rest of it to maintain.
I got a problem there then, mate.
Could you
use all your weaknesses instead?
No, it's about composure, Pete. And it also helps that I'm ex-forces. So these are the things, right? You've got to start your day in a positive way, right? So you get up, you have your routine, but you've got to start with certain levels of positivity, you've got to start with the fact that you've actually woken up, right? Because everybody knows somebody somewhere that hasn't been blessed with the day, full stop.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah, that's what you mean. Sorry, for a second, like, what do you mean, no, you woke up, what, you're still in a dream or something?
No,
I get you. It's like
we take so many things for granted. We've got to be more grateful for the stuff that we have already got.
That we've already woken up in our control.
Yeah. You know, I was asked a few days ago on a tweet about stuff, and I said, you know what? Prioritize the safety and the well-being of yourself, your loved ones, and your extended family. Now, his question was more about what stock should I buy, I think. Mm. And I had to just twist that a little bit and say, look, focus on that. Focus on the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've got to start thinking less about, I know this is an investing podcast, but right now we're in a different sort of mix. We're in a completely different sphere that none of us experienced. The only people that can tell you what they've experienced regarding anywhere near this is the people that you've got in your families that are your grandparents or your great-great-grandparents that can talk to you about the Blitz. Because this is a similar sort of thing that's going on here.
It's exactly it. Yeah.
So
It is a real once in a lifetime, once in a generation kind of testing event, isn't it?
absolutely. So
It's
what you've got to,
that big, you
it's
know?
that big. So
Incredible.
some of the tips I'm going to give you to just reduce stress, yeah, is stop looking at your portfolio every single half an hour,
Yeah, fatal that.
right? Yeah. Okay. The portfolio right now that you've held since March, anything that you held is currently down. Remember why you purchased that stock. Remember now that it's still the same stock. It's being impacted by negativity that was outside, mainly outside of its control. Some of those
Absolutely.
impacts are going to impact that company for a long, long, long time. Other stocks in your portfolio are not going to be impacted for a long, long time. Decipher which of those stocks you want to keep for the long term. And if it's there and you don't want to keep it and you think it's going to be impacted long term, then decide what you need to do with it, right? Get out of the house prior to the shutdown. If there's going to be a shutdown, get out, get some fresh air, walk into your garden, walk to your park, keep social distancing. I mean, just to remind people here, right, regarding this podcast, Pete's currently in Windsor, always is.
Sunny Windsor.
I'm in Leicestershire. Yeah, we never
Not
share a
so
room.
sunny Leicestershire.
We never share a room when we're doing these podcasts. This is why when I'm talking, I can't see Pete, and Pete's talking, and I'm talking, and sometimes you can't work out what either of us are saying. Yeah, but
One of the crazy things is that, so often me and you talk on the phone, just me and you on the phone, just having a chat normally and whatever. Or we're texting one or another or whatever, yeah. But like this week and stuff, we've hardly done it at all. We've been so, both have been so busy on things, haven't we? And whatever, it's just been no time to do anything. It's just
We go back to the giving bit, Pete. And
yeah.
I've been on the phone with numerous individuals. I was saying earlier in the podcast, newbies, a fund manager. I've had so many people on the phone for a variety of different reasons, and I try and give as much support and help as I possibly can. I do it freely.
Yeah.
And one guy I was speaking to on Tuesday night, he was like, "Why do you do this? Why would you give up your time in the evening to talk to me?" But I said, because my hope, right, and I do this with everybody that I help, I say the same thing to them, and it's the reason why, right? My hope is that when you're in such a good place, right, there's going to be somebody random that you don't know that you hear about, and you're just going to reach out to them and give to them unconditionally, and you're paying it forward. And we can all do that. There's people volunteering right now, Pete, to go into people's homes to help them with their groceries, to help them with their care.
Yeah, fantastic.
So we can all do stuff to help each other. There's shops, there's pubs, there's the restaurants, there's charities that are going to be impacted by what's going on over the next 3 months, 6 months, a year.
Oh, no
Now,
doubt about
if you want to be supportive, go into that shop and say to them, do they have a voucher scheme? Right? Does that pub have a voucher scheme where you can buy £10 worth of vouchers and they can just survive for it? And if everyone did that to a restaurant, pub, cafe that's local to them, not a big behemoth chain,
it.
local to them. That shop, cafe, whatever, might still be there in a year's time. But I tell you what, some of those shops, cafes, and other things that you like now will be gone in 12 months if you don't show your support.
Dead
Yeah?
right.
And this is what the government are trying to stop happening. But some of these restaurants, pubs, and little things that we've got in around our communities, unfortunately, are going to be gone.
Yeah, we don't want to lose them. It'd just be awful. I mean, funny you say that about like giving it forward and whatever. One of the things that I being more selfish, one of the things I find about helping other people who are distressed or they're a younger investor than me or whatever, is that by me explaining things to them, it makes me understand it better. It's like the best way of understanding, best way of learning anything is to try and explain it in simple terms to somebody else. And that's one of the reasons I do my blogs and everything, my website and my Twitter and everything, because it really helps me in the whole process. I am convinced that I've become a much better investor and certainly much better on my trading side since I've been doing the wheelie dealer thing. And the other thing that goes back the other way is that, I'm helping all these people, but I'm actually calling on people to help me. I mean, I use, Peter Higgins all the time for help and guidance. And the most important conversation I had this week was with a guy called Barney the Snail, who's on Twitter. Blooming top guy, absolutely top guy. I know him personally, been in a pub with him and whatever. And I rang him up and said, look, mate, you know, what's going on? And he's really connected. I mean, he's big in the city. I can't tell you who he is. He's that big. He's big in the city, really knows his stuff, really well connected politically and all the rest of it. And we had a real talk through about what was going to happen. And it really helped me so much. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm helping people who are younger than me. And then there's people like him who are more, he's actually younger than I am, just a bit. But you know, his experience and knowledge through the city and his contacts is just so useful.
And this is the beauty of Twitter, Pete, and the beauty of having people around you that are that can be supportive, and people, once again, as you said, paying it forward and helping and giving up their time. You know, we spoke earlier about Richard Hunter of Interactive Investor, you know, taking the time out to reply to I mean, who am I?
He took
the time out to reply, and he then enabled me to share it with other people so they can learn, because everyone's uncertain about what's going on in the market. And I think what's happened is there has been an aspect over the past, I don't know, 2, 3, or 4 years where the market has gone up and up and up and up and up. And you know, you, me, everybody else, we haven't learnt anything because the market's been a success.
It's too easy, isn't it? It's been too easy, mate.
It's become a success for us. So we've become complacent. We've become overconfident. Yeah. You know, there's certain people writing really bullish blogs, tweeting positivity about these stocks, but never talking about the downside risk to certain stocks. And I had to raise it again this week because I got so, I don't like to use the word bullied, but abused on Twitter for raising concerns on this podcast.
Mate, I can't imagine that ever happened.
Well, I do, Pete. I keep myself to myself, but every now and then when I see somebody being a bit naughty and trying to get people involved in stocks that may not be quite as they are claiming, I have to challenge it. That's because I'm trying to protect as many people as I can.
Well, that's what, you know, that's interesting because that's something I find really, you know, we've just been talking about how if we all worked together and worked in a collegiate way as investors, we can all benefit. But what I, you know, it gets me of all this aim ramping thing, you know, where basically you're buying a stock often in the cartel of other people and you just talk about the stock all day long and you're trying to encourage newbies to buy it. It's disgusting behavior, to be quite honest. And it's really low, awful.
Well, it is, Pete. But the thing is, there's a good bit about Twitter and social media, and there's always going to be the negative element, right?
Yeah.
So we spoke about it, I think it was initially back in October.
And we're all talking about it, is it winds us up so much.
Yeah, and it was being ramped to, you know, to and back, yeah, at £1.66. And whoever it was that was coordinating all of this made a chunk of change, and the shares spiked up very briefly in November to 2.85. Mm. Yeah. And it was back down. It's gone sub 80 pence, Pete, this week.
So a lot of people have been hurt there.
A lot of people that were buying that at £1.66, £2.20, £2.40, £2.50.
Which stock is that then, mate?
Metro stock.
MTR, that awful
the bank. The bank.
Oh, we talked about that. Was on the dog bowl, wasn't it? Oh, for God's sake.
I mean, this is a bank that's opening stores as much as it can. Whilst other people are closing it, that's paying one of the highest interest rates of all banks. So I'm not sure how that's sustainable. But, you know, they're still touting it. They're still trying to ramp it. They're still trying to get the share price up. And, you know, it's gone to 78 pence from 166. So a lot of people lost a lot of money listening to the rampers that were pushing that. And the ramping, I don't think, is over yet with, because people are still losing money that want to make money. So just, you know, I say this to everybody. You've got to do your own research. Doesn't matter who it is, whether it's Pete, whether it's me,
we get stuff wrong all the time.
Doesn't matter who it is on Twitter or social media that you think knows what they're talking about. There's going to be an element of risk, because the risk is the bit that happens that you never, ever planned for. And seen this black swan event has been called the coronavirus, COVID-19.
Totally.
Nobody saw the COVID-19 impact in the markets as it has. Every single stock from top to bottom is down 15-20%, other than the recent movements in stocks. So just be careful.
So true. Mate, I was going to say about the bottoms and whatever. one of the things that I've been mentioning to people and on Twitter and whatever, I was going to write a blog. Well, I am going to write a blog that looks at loads of technical indicators to suggest when we're at the bottom. Because there actually are some quite amazing, really simple ones that give you a really good steer that a bottom is in. And I'm going to do that blog. But because I've been so frazzled and so burnt out this week, I'll try and get it done this week. But if I don't get it done this week, I don't get it done. But hey, you're getting podcasts and you're getting all the tweets and all the rest of it. So you just have to like put up with it, guys. But I will no doubt be doing a weekend blog, which will probably be Sunday night, which will give the sort of current position. But I mean, I don't really need to do the blog about the bottom yet because I don't think we're quite there. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, there's some really good indicators, Pete, and it's not, you know, you like your technical analysis. Some people go,
I love it.
Regarding it. Some people really, really dislike technical analysis. But I truly find that utilizing technical analysis and fundamental analysis gives me a better steer of the company. But the other element you've got to look at is what's going on. And I've said this before to lots and lots of people. What's going on outside of the sphere? So globally, what's going on in the markets regarding that sector or that company? And that's what helps you to see what's going on. Now, we had a sort of a hint that coronavirus was coming and it might impact, but we'd never, ever saw the severity of what it's done to all the stocks.
No,
but one of the things that's been going around for a long time, Pete, and I think, and I've looked at this recently, it's called the Kopok curve. The Kopok indicator.
Oh, Kopok indicator. Yeah, mate.
I say Kopok.
That appears in Investors Chronicle and I've never got it. I've always taken the view that they waste a page on that.
So it's basically a long-term indicator though, Pete.
Okay,
it goes back to 1962.
Yeah,
so
The
indicator is designed to use on a monthly time frame. So you're looking at the sum of 14 months rate of change.
Yeah.
And that's smoothed out for 10 periods of moving average. And that gives you a sort of base and also when it's accelerating towards a recovery.
Okay. Yeah.
So if anybody wants to do any research on Kopok or Kopok indicator, that could be a good steer as to where the markets could be with a view to, have they bottomed yet? And it's been utilized by quite a lot of people. Trend followers use it a lot.
That's interesting because you mentioned there about monthly and smoothed averages and whatever. One of the, I had a good look at 2008-09 as to when the actual final bottom was. And one of the best indications I got was the monthly candlesticks. And it was brilliant because what you had was like, So over the month, you had like down candle, down candle, down candle, down candle. So it's like each candle is for a month, yeah?
Yeah.
It's like say 4 or 5 months of down, 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 down. Then you got a bullish engulfing candle, which is like when you get a big white candle that absolutely covers the previous candle from the month before. And do you know what? From that signal, it just went up candle, up candle, up candle, up candle, up candle, up candle. And you had months and months and months of rally. And that was a brilliant indicator because it was slow. Because one of the problems with indicators is they're often a little bit too fast. So you think that it's the bottom and it isn't, you know? Whereas a great thing with a monthly is it's quite a slow indicator and it gets you in more slowly, but it's got more chance of being right.
Yeah, I think the difficulty, Pete, with anything regarding
nothing's perfect, is it?
Nothing's perfect, but this is it, right? We've seen it quoted so many times over and over and over again. You know, the time to invest is when there's blood on the streets. Now, we've got a situation where the portfolios of most people...
There was blood everywhere this week.
Well, yeah, just down...
It wasn't just on the streets, mate. There was blood in my house, you know?
So stocks are down 30, 40, 50%. Some stocks have halved since February, Pete, right?
Loads have, mate. More than halved.
Yeah. You've got a situation. Another psychology, right, is this thing called, excuse the terminology, Pete, given your circumstances, right, is terminal paralysis, Pete.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah? Poor choice of words, but that's the actual term.
Yeah.
It's used. Where you don't have a plan, yeah? So the markets are down here and there's so many stocks now out there that people wanted to buy if they were 10%, 30%, 40% down. Yeah. And we've already said we don't know where the bottom is, but we're now in a situation where the vast majority of people are going, I'm not going in the market yet. I'm not going in the market yet. The people that were saying, I'm not going out of the market yet, have left the market. They've gone from 5% cash to 50% to 60% cash, and they don't know what to do yet. And they're nibbling here, they're nibbling there. So you've got to do your own thing and have your own. You've got to have a plan for reinvestment and stick with it. And I've said earlier, if you're looking to invest a certain chunk of money, don't buy it in one chunk. Don't even buy it in three chunks. Do it in four, do it in five, do it in as many as you want, because you don't know where the bottom is.
And yeah, you'll never get the perfect bottom. So try and buy it around it. Yeah.
Technical analysis is there to help you try and find it. But the macro noise and this fluidity of what's going on regarding the COVID-19.
Everything, yeah.
And the fact it's impacting schools, catering companies, restaurants, you know, construction companies are, you know, considering laying off staff and putting things on hold. If you get a lockdown across the country, everything stops. You know, the trains won't be running as much.
That's interesting. You just mentioned good old-fashioned noise. Something I wanted to bring up is that, and I'm sure we've touched on this in other podcasts, and I'm sure we'll touch on it in future ones, is this idea that it's like there's loads and loads of information in the market, right? There is, you know, just constant, and it's too much information. It's just information, you know, data points and whatever. There's information. But the reality is, out of all that information, and this applies to markets and it applies to stocks, there's often only one, two, maybe three pieces of information that really matter. And it's a bit like, at the moment, my sense is that what really matters in the sort of next, I don't know, days or weeks, yeah, is these bailout packages. When we get the Americans, within days, are going to announce this massive bailout package, we're going to get Chancellor doing his tomorrow. That is what matters. That overrides anything else. That will drive a bounce of some, you know, I think it will drive a rally of some sort, which will then, I think, probably drop back. But my point is that all this other noise, all this other stuff you hear, I mean, God, one of the classics that I've had lately is the stock exchange is going to get shut down. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. Steve Mnuchin, the guy from Trump's administration, whatever, you know, the guy who does all that, I don't know what he is, Treasury Secretary, is he, or something? He said, we will not be closing the stock market. He said, we may reduce the hours, but we will not be closing it. Because you think about it, right? What are the consequences of closing the market? It would just make things worse. Oh, you know, as soon as it opened, everyone would just sell. It'd be ridiculous. It's nonsense.
We just fall off a cliff if they shut the market.
Yeah. People are putting out all this stuff on Twitter about, and you just think, oh, for goodness sake. And people who got billions of followers ought to know better. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think this goes back to the conversation we're having initially about the coronavirus, Pete. There are certain websites to follow. You know, the stuff that you see on Facebook and you see on Twitter and see in other places.
Sensationalist.
It's dangerous, and it's sensationalism, and it's clickbait. And you've got to just watch what you read and who you're clicking on and who you're listening to. And if someone's putting out, you know, misinformation, just avoid it. You know, spend less time looking on social media at nonsense and focus on your well-being. Get outside, look after yourself, look after your family. You know,
I'm sure you do this, Pete, right? But one of the things that I really believe in, and this is something that I've changed as an investor over the years, is that I used to read all the things and all the rest of it. But you know what? Now I don't almost read any opinions. I work it out myself. I find the information. I find the data points. I think it through in my brain. I ring my mates like Barney. I speak to Peter and whatever, and I figure it out myself, you know? Then I know what's going on because I've used my own brain to think it through. I mean, that's easy enough with experience, obviously, you know.
It comes with this experience, Peter. I think what happens on Twitter and social media is that people get into cohorts and certain people lead
group think.
And if they're liked and respected by a large cohort of people, all of a sudden it almost becomes like a cult. And people are listening going, oh, yeah, regarding what this person is saying regarding that stock or that situation about coronavirus or that thing about it only, you know, it's only a problem for China. And that becomes groupthink. So when a situation like what's happened now happens, and the realities of actually this is bigger than just a flu, by the way, and we're going to shut schools down and it's going to impact everybody, and restaurants and pubs and all this and football matches and the Grand Prix are impacted, the people that are still saying that this isn't really a thing is, you know, you've got to question their realities. But some of these people are leading large cohorts of people in groupthink, and they've done that with the same with various different stocks over the years. They've talked about, I won't name names now, right now, that stock and that stock, and those stocks are now down 80, 90, 99% down from where they peaked when all of that cohort were in that stock. And a prime example, let's name one stock. Visarium. I remember the days of Visarium.
Oh, VRS.
Not speak about Visarium without 20, 30, 40 people jumping all over your back. And
mate, do you remember when Visarium won the Bello Stock of the Year thing?
Mate, that was only last May.
Oh, unbelievable that was. Shocking. What? So how's that? Where is that one now?
Oh, I don't look. I mean, what concerns me, Pete, is that so many people have lost a vast sum of money in that stock, and it may come good one day. I don't know, Pete, right? But you know, it was nearly £2 a share, right? Where are we? We're at.
I'm pretty sure I saw it below 60.
We're going back to September of 2018.
It
nearly hit £2 a share.
And everyone was raving about it and whatever.
And everyone was on it, and it was doing.
And it had like no revenue. And
today
it touched. I mean,
today it touched 22 pence and closed at 25.5 pence.
Oh, and I bet it'll go down lower. I bet it'll go lower, mate.
It might well do, Pete. It's a stock where I did my research and I thought, you know what? If some of this technology actually happens, then it's got a good chance of doing really, really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, much, much later, because I don't really meet a lot of CEOs and so on and so forth. I try and stay, I go to
keep
events.
Away.
Like to do my research myself.
Yeah.
And it was only, I think it was probably last May or something like that. I met Neil Ricketts, who's the CEO.
Yeah.
Charming guy, very lovely passionate. Guy,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Family man.
Yeah.
And he put so much effort into getting Visarium where it was.
Yeah,
but
he worked hard.
But you've got to have companies, behemoth companies, buying that technology and giving you contracts and so on and so forth. And it's not for the will of trying by the Visarium team, Neil Ricketts and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But the contracts, you know, they've had MOUs and so on and so forth, you know, agreements of this and agreements of that. They've not materialised into revenue, Pete.
Actual pound notes.
So I was fortunate to have got done my research and thought, this could do all right, and I purchased it at 18 pence. Trimmed it along the way, and every time I trimmed it, I got grief. Trimmed at 81 pence, trimmed it at £1.19.4, and eventually sold out of the stock. You know what I mean? So I trimmed it at 157 and eventually sold a lot.
The thing is, you played that absolutely right, and you always do on these, because you do a lot more high-risk speculative stuff than I do, but you do it right because you only buy a little bit. The thing that gets me is the people on Twitter have put all their money into Visarium, or they put all their money into, you know, some other piece of AIM garbage, and you're just going to lose your money, people. Stop doing it. Get a diversified portfolio. Get some quality stuff in there. You might be able to have a speculative punt, but be careful because very few of them work. Mate, it's 1952, so we might have to draw it to a close.
We're rattling on, folks. We've managed to do two podcasts of this evening.
We're ranting.
We're already ranting. 48 minutes and 30 seconds in. I want to give a big shout out for everybody on Twitter and across social media, all of those absolute heroes that are out there. You know, we've got health staff, we've got doctors, consultants, nurses, teachers, social workers, carers, all doing a phenomenal job out there, trying to help as many people as possible.
And working in terrible circumstances, and it's going to get worse for them. I mean, it's, you know, people who work in the NHS now, it is going to be really tough. You look what's happened in Italy, it's not been pleasant.
Absolutely. So we've just got to be mindful that we do the best that we possibly can to support as many people as we possibly can, and just be supportive of each other and help each other, because this is a stress test for us as individuals, and we've got to do as best we can to support each other. So just take care of each other. stay safe, stay healthy, look after your loved ones, and, you know, don't worry about the portfolio. If you're a long-term investor, 10 years from now, you'll be fine, but just stay healthy.
And do what I'm going to do, dig your garden, get some spuds in there, you can dig for victory.
Absolutely. Okay, signing off. Take care.
All right, mate. See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Twin Peaks
podcast. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye for now. Bye-bye.